Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Wisconsin's wolf hunt, at one point scheduled for last Saturday, is off again, at least until next year. We'll hear both sides of the issue.
Five calves were killed this spring to the south of me, five calves to the north of me. It's just a management tool to be able to keep the wolves in check.
The only state in the country that has a law that forces you to kill wolves.
Then, they left their Duluth Superior roots for California, but not without one last local recording session. We'll catch up with one less guest. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
Well, sometimes I go out by myself and I look across the water.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Wisconsin's wolf hunt, at one point scheduled for last Saturday, is off again, at least until next year. We'll hear both sides of the issue.
The only state in the country that has a law that forces you to kill wolves.
Five calves were killed this spring to the south of me, five calves to the north of me. It's just a management tool to be able to keep the wolves in check.
Then, they left their Duluth Superior roots for California, but not without one last local recording session. We'll catch up with one less guest. Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Wisconsin is the only state in the union that mandates a wolf season. That happens when the animal's population is plentiful enough to have it taken off the endangered species list. The wolf population can vary, and last year it was delisted as an endangered species by the Trump administration in a ruling that took effect in January. After legal battles, Wisconsin allowed a hunt in February of this year, but hunters quickly killed nearly double their 119 wolf quota, taking 218 wolves in less than 72 hours. Now the matter is back in court before another hunt can proceed. WPR News reporter Danielle Kading has been closely following the story, and we'll hear from her shortly. But first, another of my WPR colleagues, Shireen Seward, heard basic arguments for and against the hunt from both sides of the issue. Speaking with her recently were Pat Quaintance of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation and Adrian Y. Devin of the Timberwolf Alliance, and with the Native American point of view against the hunt, longtime journalist Paul DeMaine, a member of the Oneida Nation, living at La Couderie. Here's their conversation.
Wisconsin doesn't just allow a wolf hunting season. It's required by state law when the animals are not federally listed as endangered. It's the only state with such a legal requirement. But hunting the gray wolf, once an endangered species, remains a contentious issue. Advocates argue that hunting is the only way to control the animals, which they see as a threat to livestock and pets. Critics say the wolf population is still too small to sustain hunting, and members of some tribal nations say they feel they're being ignored in their concerns about wolf hunting in the state. Joining us today is wildlife biologist Adrian Y. Devin, formerly with the Department of Natural Resources and current chair of the Timberwolf Alliance. The Alliance is part of the Sigurd Olsen Environmental Institute at Northland College in Ashland. Adrian, thank you so much for being here today.
Welcome for having me.
Also joining us is Patrick Quaintance. He is a president of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. He's a retired Wisconsin conservation warden and has also been involved with the Wisconsin Conservation Congress and various hunting groups. Our next guest is Paul DeMaine. And Paul is retired managing editor and CEO of Indian Country Communications, news from Indian Country, and producer for Indian Country TV based in the La Couderie Ojibwe Reservation in northern Wisconsin. He's a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin and of Ojibwe descent, with relations on many Ojibwe reservations here in Wisconsin and Minnesota. He's also a former Indian Affairs Policy Advisor under Governor Anthony Earl. Paul, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Adrian, what is the Timberwolf Alliance? What role does it play in this issue?
Well, Timberwolf Alliance does not take positions on things such as whether it should or should not be hunting seasons, but is an educational organization, promotes sound science for wolf management. We were created in 1987 at the time that Wisconsin DNR was developing its first recovery plan. And one of the things that we do every year is celebrate Wolf Awareness Week to promote sound science in wolf management.
And Pat, tell us about the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. What is its mission?
We're a nonprofit organization. We represent 206 sportsman groups in the state of Wisconsin. We're an educational type group also, and we also supported the Natural Resource Board of having 300 wolves.
And Paul, as a member of the Oneida Nation, how involved are you with the wolf hunt issue?
I'm not involved in the wolf hunt issue at all, other than from the perspective of an Indigenous person. We have 11 tribes in the state of Wisconsin. Each one of those tribes has a clan totem family relationship with the wolves. All 11 tribes do, which shows a little bit about the relationship that Indigenous people here in the Great Lakes have with those animals. And what I've done is pretty much covered resource news through News from Indian Country for about 40 years. And while I'm retiring from that, I still chair the Honor the Earth organization, environmental organization, which concerns itself with natural resources, treaty rights, the preservation of pristine waters and other resources.
Thank you for explaining that. As I mentioned, Wisconsin is the only state that mandates a wolf season. It's one of five that allows wolves to be hunted at all. Adrian, can you explain, what does the law say about hunting wolves in Wisconsin? When is it permitted?
Well, currently, the Wisconsin law on wolf hunting and trapping requires that the state holds a wolf hunting and trapping season every year when they aren't listed as a federal or state threatened or endangered species. Initially, the hunting season would have started in mid-October. That was revised in 2015 to start on the first Saturday in November, and can potentially extend to the end of February unless the wolf quotas are met in zones. And when hunting seasons were previously used in Wisconsin, all the zones typically ended by early mid-December. So the seasons never quite extended into January or February. That differed this last winter when we did have a wolf hunting season in February.
Has that law been on the books for a long time?
That was created in 2012, right after wolves were delisted in 2012. So that law has been on the books now for about 9 years.
Okay. Pat, what is the primary reason that wolves are hunted?
It's just a management tool to be able to keep the wolves in check. It's well known that the problems that we've had and depredation and so on, it's a tool to be able to manage the wolves.
Okay. And Adrian, generally speaking, where does the opposition come from? Why do some people, even people who hunt other animals like deer, oppose hunting wolves?
Well, there are some people who oppose any kind of hunting unless the animal is being used for food. In the case of wolves, obviously, they're not going to be used for food, but they are a fur-bearing mammal that are hunted and trapped in many in other states and in most Canadian provinces where they do occur. I think the opposition ranges from people who still see wolves as an endangered species and don't feel they're ready to be a hunted species. And there are people who just oppose hunting in general. So I'm sure it covers a whole range of various issues. Paul will talk more about this, but certainly amongst many Native Americans, they play a special cultural role. So,
Paul, let's talk about that a little bit. What role does the wolf have in Native American culture, especially here in Wisconsin?
Well, it has a cultural perspective that goes way back hundreds of thousands of years. Some of the original stories talk about how wolf and indigenous people would follow the same path side by side and suffer the same fate. And so when we watch the demise and extinction and the sporting of the wolf, those people who are clan and family members to that wolf, and our communities have studied the wolves extensively in terms of how they act, how they react, how they self-populate themselves and regulate themselves and those kinds of things. A lot of historic technical, traditional ecological knowledge that goes into it. But, you know, in terms of the discussion today, I'm just going to say that I think the latest discussion in the last few years is a totally long wrong approach. I think in the long run, we need a long-term solution, and that long-term solution looks the same as what established our national parks, our state parks, and everything else, where we create corridors, biocorridors that are not only forested and replicate what used to be, but allows corridors for these types of animals, moose and wolf and elk and other, to exist. And it's a long-term plan in which we're telling people that it's time to remove people from some of these corridors. We're the ones that have imposed ourselves within their territories, causing their demise. So rather than talking about all the intricacies of trying to accommodate a group of hunters that represent probably less than a half of 1% and are influenced by outsized money institutions, organizations from out of the state, and a law, the only state in the country that has a law that forces you to kill wolves as a tool. In other words, you know, I know tribal members who want to take fur-bearing animals, including wolves, and we need to accommodate that. But I think we need to look at the long-term institutional racism and other things that guides these decisions from a European sporting event attitude rather than a deep attitude of respect toward all living things.
One of the big disagreements in this issue is the wolf quota itself. Adrian, DNR scientists advocated for a lower number. And before we get into the varying positions on that, I want to ask you, how do scientists determine the appropriate number of wolves that can be hunted?
Well, sustainable numbers would be a level that a population can sustain without the population taking drastic declines. And that's been kind of learned by looking at wolf populations across all of North America and what different levels of harvest and different levels of controls have done to the population. So there's signs that suggest that about 25-30% of a population can be removed by humans. And that's all removal by humans, including illegal kill, vehicle collisions, as well as legal harvest. But at the same time, you know, what is a sustainable harvest versus when and how the harvest should occur are a sort of almost questions that are beyond really science. And those are more of cultural and social issues, as well as political issues as to what levels of a population should be managed.
Well, the DNR scientists recommended a quota of 130 wolves in the upcoming fall hunt. The Natural Resources Board set a quota of 300. Half of that is set aside for tribal nations in the state. Pat, what was your reaction to the number that was set?
Well, one of the things that we looked at when we talked about this with the Wildlife Federation was is we looked at the Conservation Congress 300 wolves, plus we looked at the rest of the Wisconsin bear hunters. And one of the things is there's been a 350 level of wolves with the wolf management plan that's been outdated for many years here. And we've talked about this, but it right now the wolf management plan says 350 wolves. We have not even attempted to reach that quota level or that level of 350 wolves. We agree that someday, hopefully, we'll get back on the table and get this wolf management plan ironed out and be able to determine what is sustainable. And Adrian can even contest to this, is that once the wolf population reached 350 or above that, we started having a lot of depredation. And I think our main concern is this, is that it would have been nice to have a farmer on here also to talk about the problems they're having with depredation. And I'm living right in amongst people that are having problems with depredation. Five calves were killed this spring to the south of me, five calves to the north of me within a half mile of my house here. Another five horses were killed to the west of me within a mile of my house here. Once we reach this level of a problem where we're having depredation, people are getting frustrated and discouraged with this. They've lost calves that they cannot find or can, and they don't get reimbursed for it. And so on. Sure. So the people really get frustrated with it. And pretty soon we got people shooting wolves that shouldn't be shooting wolves.
You're listening to Pat Quaintance, Paul DeMaine, and Adrian Wydevin, our guests today, as we continue this discussion on the issues and controversy surrounding the wolf hunt in Wisconsin. I'm Shereen Seward. I know the state's tribal nations are pretty unhappy with the quota that was set by the Natural Resources Board. They have said that it potentially violates their federal treaty rights. Paul, can you explain the treaty rights and why the tribes are entitled to a percentage of the quota?
Well, I want to say, first of all, that I don't envy anyone on either side of this discussion because it's difficult. I think the first thing we could agree upon is that there's some things that we probably will never agree upon in regards to the ethical questions, the cultural questions that come up in this discussion. But when it comes to treaty rights, there's a fiduciary responsibility, a trust responsibility that the United States government signed with the Ojibwe people in this particular case. Those treaty rights, if you look at the 44 treaties that were signed with the Ojibwe Nation, consistently talked about preserving the right to manage and access resources to feed and utilize within a family economic model, that is the right to hunt, fish, and gather on the lands. That fiduciary trust responsibility in a contract and a treaty was signed by two sides. So all the indigenous people have half of the obligation. And so far, the DNR managing these resources has not at least from a tribal view, is not a positive view because they're not just managing things. In a lot of cases, they're permitting people, permit people to shoot wolves as a tool, permitting to shoot sand cranes because people like to shoot stuff, permitting companies and corporations to pollute up to a certain level. Less management than an agency that permits people to degrade the earth or the resources in many ways. And I think that, again, that model just simply says that tribes and non-Indigenous entities are going to be in conflict. And so we need to look not only to short-term solutions, but long-term solutions. And again, I say, sometime, I know farmers in northern Wisconsin who have wolf packs in their farm areas, and they read the wolves, they work with the wolves, they don't have predation. And so I don't know what the people who are losing horses are doing, maybe nothing. And it's a concern. We need to deal with those. There needs to be culling, there needs to be action taken. But I don't think that allowing people to have fun shooting wolves is the way that we ought to cull or manage or use that as a tool. If that's the tool, then give it to the tribes to utilize as they need based on what they do because of their relationship with those wolves.
Thank you all for your perspective. I'm Shereen Seward. Once again, a thanks to our guests, Pat Quaintance from the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, Paul DeMaine from the Oneida Nation, and Adrian Wydevin with the Timberwolf Alliance.
And that was an excerpt from a conversation last month between my Wisconsin Public Radio colleague, Shereen Seward, with and Pat Quaintance of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, Adrian Wydevin of the Timberwolf Alliance, and journalist Paul DeMaine, a member of the Oneida Nation living at Lacouture. Joining us now is Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News, who has been covering the ever-changing story of the wolf hunt for forever, it seems. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin. How are you?
Not too bad as we go on with this story. We just heard arguments for and against the hunt. What's a brief synopsis of the off-again, on-again story of a new hunt since the one that was held in February? And where are we now?
Yeah, well, right now in Wisconsin, the state's wolf hunt was set to kick off last Saturday, but the season's been on hold after a Dane County judge issued a temporary injunction barring the hunt. That ruling was made in one of two lawsuits that sought to stop the season this fall. And the thread of both of those legal challenges is that wildlife advocacy groups and tribes say Wisconsin is not properly managing the wolf population. And they've pointed to a court-ordered hunt in February during which hunters killed 218 wolves in less than 3 days. And Dane County Judge Jacob Frost ruled in late October that the way the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources was regulating the hunt was unconstitutional and ordered the agency to update its rules and its outdated wolf management plan before moving forward with the season.
So I want to break it down a little meticulously. That would say off again, or at least off for this year.
Right. Work is underway right now to update the state's outdated wolf management plan, but that plan isn't expected to be finished until far after the season next year. So the Wisconsin Department of Justice had indicated that they would appeal the Dane County judge's ruling on behalf of the DNR, but as of Thursday morning, no appeal had been filed.
Okay, and the Dane County courtroom isn't the only legal avenue various sides are taking.
Right. Another lawsuit by six Wisconsin tribes sought an injunction in federal court to stop the hunt, and they alleged that the state is violating their treaty rights, but a judge decided not to go that route.
And on the hunter's side, they're not too happy?
No, they're not. Hunters aren't pleased with the state judge's ruling, and their request to intervene in the case has been denied, and that means that they've been unable to appeal the Dane County judge's ruling. And as we're speaking, oral arguments are being held today in a federal case in which wildlife and environmental groups have sued to restore protections for the wolf nationwide following the Trump administration's decision to delist the animal in January. And the Biden administration is defending that move in court, and it's unclear whether the federal judge will issue a ruling at the close of arguments today. Over the years, there have been multiple legal challenges over the wolf status as an endangered species, as it has been delisted and relisted several times in our region.
All right. Well, you certainly bring us up to the moment with the possible action today, or if you're listening to us later in the day, that already happened or did not. So we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News, and definitely the reporter on the wolf hunt, on and off wolf hunt. You'll come back and join us for the news roundup later in the show?
Oh, absolutely, Robin. Wouldn't miss it.
All right. We'll see you then. Coming up, one last guest shares one last album recorded before their move to California.
So tell me what you wanna do. You say the world doesn't fit with you.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Our next guests have been among our more frequent musical guests on the show, and true to their name, they became one less guest when they headed off to sunny California earlier this year. But you could say they took part of Duluth and Superior with them, maybe even a front porch or perch with the new album they recorded locally just before heading out. It's out now as The Perch Sessions, and here to tell us about it and how the California thing is working out are Wren Cooper and Nick Muska. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Wren and Nick.
Hi, Robin. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, Robin. Good to be back, at least via phone anyway.
And our phones have changed a bit. If you make a phone call in Duluth, you now have to dial 10 digits. Duluth was the last holdout of 7-digit only dialing, but now you have to dial all 10. I didn't know this, and the other week I was calling people and kept getting all these messages. Please dial the area code or the number 1 before your number. And I was thinking, what am I doing? Getting all these really old people who have rotary phones or something? And that happened while you were gone.
Well, we've been making nothing but long-distance calls lately, so.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. You were dialing at least 10 digits, right? And Superior's been ahead of Duluth on this one. You've had to dial 10 digits for years, so. Other than that, how about you? Are you homesick yet?
I definitely think with the holidays around the corner, you know, you get a little twinge of that and starting to hear a little Christmas music, and there's no, and the visual isn't matching up for me where there's no snow, you know, so I'm just like, what's going on right now?
Well, I'm going to tell you, there's no snow here. We are recording this a little earlier in the week, but it hit 58 degrees. This is the second week in November. Yep. In Duluth Superior, 58 degrees in November.
Wow.
I don't know. Do you want to call that some certain name to this phenomenon perhaps?
Well, I don't want to get into that. I don't know.
Well, the reality is climate change, which is what you're trying to avoid saying, doesn't work that way. But I got to say, it is unusual. How about you, Wren? Homesick?
Oh, homesick a little bit. We got back once about a month ago to visit some family for a wedding, so that was good. But yeah, gonna miss being there over the holidays. You know, the things that make winter fun for me are definitely back in the Midwest. So we'll see how to make it fun out here.
And where exactly is out here? I said California.
Yeah, we're in Orange County, which is Southern California, pretty close to L.A.
Okay, there will not be snow, I'll guarantee you.
There will hopefully not be snow, although part of me kind of wants to see what would happen.
Yeah, you would be experts. And by the way, then I think you don't have to worry about politics. You can say climate change all you want if it's snowing in Orange County. So.
Yeah, we would definitely be talking about it then.
And the music scene, but back up again. Orange County, it's big. So where in Orange County?
So we are currently living in Costa Mesa. That's where our cozy little apartment is at. But we rehearse, I believe, what is it?
Garden Grove.
Yeah. So Orange County is just kind of this culmination of all these cities like smushed next to each other. So you can go to like 5 different cities in a day. So we just call the whole area Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to get to know things around here and settle into an area this big.
Mm-hmm. Did you know that they went bankrupt because of retiree health care costs, which Duluth actually avoided by addressing it?
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, this is what newspaper people tell you, even though I'm a radio person now. We accumulate things like this in our brains and wait for the opportunity to say it.
I've been doing a little bit of that because, you know, we got the Long Beach and the LA forts down here. And I mean, they're humongous and people talk about it and, oh, I bet you didn't have this back home. And I would go like, well, actually, Duluth is the largest freshwater port in the world. Oh, those little Duluth facts carry around.
Not to mention in terms of tonnage, because, of course, what we ship weighs a lot. Duluth Superior Harbor is one of the biggest ports in the world because of tonnage. You can tell people that if you didn't know.
We will. You know, we're always looking for things that are comparable between the two places. Like the zip code out here is 714, and for Superior it's 715. So
you mean the area code, not zip code?
Not the zip code. You're right. The area code.
The one that you have to dial all 10 digits, right? Yes.
I'm glad. Exactly. We're bringing it back around.
Well, that's a good opportunity for me to say we're speaking with Ren Cooper and Nick Muska of One Less Guest. So tell us about the Perch Sessions tunes. I'm assuming Perch, you're doing a kind of pun on Porch Sessions, or well, you tell me.
So the Perch, it's a place, it's really special to us. It's outside of Duluth, up on, God, I'm so bad with roads.
It's off of Jean Duluth Road.
Oh, okay. Named after the fictitious Jean Duluth. There wasn't one, but go ahead. Yep.
Right.
Huh. You're all full of facts, Robin.
I've been working at this stuff for 40 years. So, yeah.
So, yeah, the Perch is up on Jean Duluth Road. And when we were first playing together, Lauren and I and then Nick Glass, you know, once we added him on, you know, we were an acoustic band, but we would go up to the Perch, and the guy who was kind of running things up there, his name's Charlie Kratz, and his big thing is he's just able to get creativity out of people, which is like such a gift. And he would always just have us over, make us feel really welcome. There would always be like other musicians there, and we just kind of jam. And, you know, we did a lot of cover tunes and stuff like that. And so we thought it would be kind of a fun thing before we left town to go back up there and do some of those old covers and jam again, you know, kind of nostalgic, but also just kind of a way to look back and be like, wow, look, you know, we've kind of come a ways, but we still have a lot of fun just playing together. So,
well, let's hear something from the Perch Sessions. What do you suggest?
Let's do Valerie. This is a fun one for us for sure.
All right. Here's a cover of Valerie by One Less Guest.
Your ginger hair and the way you like to dress. Why don't you come on over? Stop shopping anywhere? Change the color of your hair, girl, are you busy? And did you have to pay that fine that you were dodging all the time? Are you still dizzy? Cause since I've been home, well, my body's been a mess. I miss your ginger hair and the way you like to dress. Why don't you come on over? Stop making a fool out of me. Why don't you come on over, Valerie? Valerie. Valerie. Valerie.
And that was a cover of Valerie by our guests, one less guest, Ren Cooper and Nick Muska, who joined us from California. So is the Perch Session album all covers?
Yeah, so this one is all covers. It's kind of all of our favorites and all of our fan favorite, or I guess not all of them, but like some of the main favorites.
Right. We got 5 out on YouTube and SoundCloud. And then we got a bonus track on Patreon, which is a new platform for us. It's really cool.
I always ask you, you know, where can we find you? First of all, your website is?
Yeah, www.onelessguest.com.
And Patreon?
We're at www.patreon.com/onelessguest. And Patreon it's a new platform for us. The basic concept of the service is it's subscription-based. So our subscription is $6.54 per month, which as long as we're talking about telephones, that's OLG if you type it on a phone, 654. So I was like, there you go.
The theme is phones today.
Yeah.
All right.
So for $6.54 a month, we put out a newsletter. It's got all our shows, but it's also just like stuff that's going on in our lives. There's like a more personal kind of account of like what's going on with the band. With this new release, you know, we released it early, and we put a bonus track. You can only find that bonus track on Patreon. It's just a cool service because it's like, it's really a direct way for people to help us create.
All right. Well, let's hear more of what you created, and I'm going to pick this one. Don't Know Why. Tell us why you picked that.
So that one's a great one. Fans have always loved that from the beginning. Really kind of soft and metal, mellow and just like, fun to do on like a hazy day.
All right. Here's Don't Know Why by One Less Guest.
I till I saw the sun. Don't know why I didn't come. Left you by the house of fun. Don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why I didn't come. When I saw the break of day, wish that I could fly away. Instead of kneeling in the sand, catching teardrops in my hands, my heart is drenched in wine. But you'll be on my mind forever. Out across the endless sea, in ecstasy. Instead of be a bag of bones, driving down the road alone. My heart is drenched in wine, but you're drum. Don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why I didn't come. I don't know why I didn't come.
That was Don't Know Why by One Less Guest from their cover album, or album of covers, The Perch Sessions, which was recorded in Duluth Superior before they headed out to California. We're speaking with Ren Cooper, who plays the violin and does vocals, and Nick Muska, who plays guitar. The other two bandmates are Nick Glass on bass and drummer Cody Thorson, who is the bandmate who got them to move out to California. What do you want to take us out with?
We'll do Give Me All Your Love. And there's actually a music video for this as well on YouTube and Facebook. And we recorded it up at the Perch. So if you want to see what the Perch looks like and support us a little bit by going and watching the video, please do that.
All right. We'll go out to Give Me All Your Love. Ren Cooper and Nick Muska, thanks for checking in with us again.
Thanks, Robin.
Thank you. Bye. Just a little while. Tell me what.
say the world doesn't fit with you.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hello, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
And with us for the first time today is Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
So, Rick, we hit a milestone in COVID cases this week, but not one we'd want to celebrate.
Yes, unfortunately, the Duluth Superior region's weekly COVID-19 case count reached its highest mark for 2021. The 10-county region recorded 1,653 new positive cases between October 29 and November 4, and that was the most since mid-December of last year. 13 people also died in that week. The previous week, the region recorded 1,243 new cases. And according to data from St. Louis County Public Health, 241 of the county's 921 cases that week were in people younger than 20 years old. People aged 30 to 34 accounted for the largest case total in the county, with 98 in each category testing positive that week. The second highest total of new cases was reported in people aged 20 to 24, with 94 positive cases.
Not good numbers. Well, if we can turn to more enlightening news, it's the season, or pretty close to it, because it looks like Bentleyville is almost up.
Yes, it is. It's almost time for Bentleyville to light up Duluth for the holidays. This will be the 18th year already for the holiday light display that Nathan Bentley started in homes in Cloquet and Esco. It will be the 13th year at Bayfront Festival Park in Duluth. Last year, the COVID-19 pandemic forced a change to a drive-through format, but Bentleyville will return to its familiar walk-through format this season. And as always, it's free to attend and opens Saturday, November 20 this year and lasts until Monday, December 27.
You know, I really like the drive-through. In fact, we did a radio version of that drive-through last year, but maybe we could do it again walking. As nearly as much an institution as Bentleyville, we lost one of the region's most colorful people this week.
Yes, we did. Captain Tom McKay, who was an almost lifelong Park Point resident and former Vista Fleet captain, known for his friendship, kindness, and knowledge of the geography of the bay, died unexpectedly Thursday, November 4 at the age of 77. He was known to many, many people as Captain Tom. He was remembered this week by friends, family, and neighbors as an artist, an ice boat and regular boat enthusiast. He was someone who was easy to get along with and a man very proud of his Scottish heritage. He kept the ship wheel in his front yard. In the back, he kept a collection of national flags, a dock with decorative plates bearing his last name, a glowing buoy ball that changed to muted neon shades. And he was a regular source of information for reporters on all things Park Point, whether it was a question about water levels, the muddiness of the water on the bay, or the frequency of bear sightings out there. He was a go-to source. He also wrote letters to the editor, was in communication with reporters and editors, especially if something was incorrect. It was very important to him to get geography information correct about the bay. He once wrote a letter to the editor that stated Superior Bay is between Park Point and the Blatnik Bridge. St. Louis Bay is between Blatnik Bridge and Bong Bridge. Emergency responders rely on accurate information. So he was someone that we talked to and spoke to frequently, and he will certainly be missed by many people.
And, you know, you got me nervous here because I was about to say Danny on the Wisconsin side, but because of Captain Tom, I'm going to be careful about what side I'm talking about and where the Wisconsin side starts. But you know where it is. And there's big news in Wisconsin. Let's just put it that way. Big news involving big money.
Yeah, Wisconsin is expected to see significant investment from the infrastructure bill that recently passed Congress. That $1 trillion plan will bring $110 billion. And extra money for roads and bridges across the country. And in Wisconsin, that means an extra $1.1 billion in federal highway aid to the state over the next 5 years. And Wisconsin hasn't seen funding like this for transportation since the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act during the Great Recession. So the bill will also provide Wisconsin with $594 million over 5 years for public transit and $79 million for electric vehicle infrastructure. Wisconsin Transportation Secretary Craig Thompson said they're already meeting with local governments about projects, and regarding bridges, the state is expected to see $225 million over the next 5 years, and he expects much of that will go to communities outside of Madison and Milwaukee to replace bridges that have been under weight restrictions, which can hold up the timber and ag industry whenever you encounter those bridges.
Well, I heard you say bridge more than a few times there. Would that include our own Blatnik Bridge?
Yeah, actually, Thompson said they're looking to compete for around $12.5 billion that's been set aside for the bridge investment program to replace the Blatnik Bridge that runs from Superior to Duluth. This bridge needs to be replaced because of substantial corrosion that requires frequent maintenance, among other issues, and officials are planning that right now, and they're hoping to begin construction sometime in 2028.
Well, lawmakers are also looking for funding to support a paper mill in the region, but it may not be a sure thing.
Yeah, lawmakers are hoping that a new bill will help two closed paper mills reopen, actually. But if the bill doesn't pass soon, it could mean that the owner of the Park Falls paper mill will move forward with liquidation and auction off parts of that operation on November 17th. The Park Falls mill and another one owned by Verso in Wisconsin Rapids are sitting idle right now. And that means that they just aren't in production because they're being maintained by small crews right now. But with winter approaching, the operations could see damage beyond repair to their machinery if owners don't keep the heat on. So the new bill would fund a $15 million state loan toward the purchase of the Park Falls mill in a last-ditch effort to prevent that auction. It would also fund a $1 million loan to Verso to make sure the company would be able to keep the heat on and preserve its equipment at the mill in Wisconsin Rapids. But the bill's prospects don't look good right now. These Assembly has voted on it, but the Senate hasn't, and the legislative session ends this week. So there is a chance that a judge could order the Park Falls mill owner to delay the auction, but it seems like a long shot.
All right. Well, we've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at DuluthNewsTribune.com and WPR.org. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the music of our favorite California transplants. One less guest. Stay safe, everyone.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone.
It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long anytime she goes away. I wonder this time where she's gone. I wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine where